our starting point for tonight is the statement of the Ramban on Eileh HaMishpotim, where he says that Eileh HaMishpotim keneged loy tachmod. Now bear in mind, Eileh HaMishpotim is one parasha, but the parasha contains within it almost everything of civil and commercial law in the Torah, which constitutes one of the four chalakim of Shulchan Aruch. So that's one quarter of Jewish law as far as Shulchan Aruch is concerned. It consists of, it's one of the Sidorim of Shas, so out of the six Sidorim of Shas, which include things like Kodshim and Taurus, which apply to the Beis HaMikdash's time, don't apply today directly. So of the remaining four that do apply today, again, it's one quarter. It's Seder Nezikin, the whole of Seder Nezikin, which is probably the biggest section. All of that is built on the verses of Mishpatim, of what we're able to learn in Mishpatim. So although it's only one parasha, it's the parasha of the legal system. The whole legal system is contained in Mishpatim. And what is Mishpatim about, says the Rambam? Ve'elah Mishpatim keneged lo tachmod. This whole parasha is coming to explain one of the Ten Commandments. So now you understand why you've got a piece of from Parshas Yisrael in front of you. This, the whole of Mishpatim is to explain one of the Ten Commandments. Which one? The last one. Lo tachmod. You shall not covet, as it's translated in English. You'll see as we get in further on, that's not a great translation. And it's the peculiarity of that statement, because think about it. That means all of law, the whole legal system, is designed to tell us how to be mekayim, the mitzvah of lo tachmod, the isur, how not to be over, how not to transgress the isur of lo tachmod. So already here you see how completely different Jewish law is from any other legal system, and how a conventional approach to law, using a secular general approach to law, in order to understand Gemara and the legal system of the Torah, is just using the wrong instrument. There's no way you're going to be able to understand it. That doesn't mean that there's not a whole lot of commercial and business law in the Torah that is very relevant to the legal systems of the nations of the world, and that they haven't learned a whole lot of things from it, and that they can't learn. Of course there are, and there are parallels, there are all sorts of things that you can learn, but you can't use, the same as we've been saying in the last few shiurim, that you can't use sociology and psychology and philosophy to understand Torah, because that's not the right instrument, and when you do that, you come out with incorrect conclusions. And if the Torah is designed as an instrument to help us determine God's will in situations that are not stated clearly, then if we use the wrong instrument to deduce God's will, we're going to come out with the wrong answer, and we're going to live the wrong life, and we're going to make wrong choices. Not even because it's bad enough, we often make wrong choices even when we know what's right. That's part of our difficulty. Hi, Norman, have you got a seat somewhere? Yeah, you sure? It's bad enough that often we know what's right and still we do wrong. But not to even know what's right because our system of thinking is wrong. That's the frightening thing, to go through one's life thinking that you know what God wants of you. And you don't. Because you used a philosophical or a psychological or a sociological or a legal instrument to try and interpret and understand the Torah. The Torah is a discipline of its own, and just as you can't use a scientific instrument to understand a Rembrandt, and you can't use a musical instrument to understand a piece of law, so you can't use any other instrument to understand Torah other than the instrument of the Torah. And that's what learning Torah is about, is to learn how to use the instrument. Learning Torah is not to learn the laws. You don't need to learn the laws. You can look them up. If you want to know what to do, you take out a Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, and now there are millions of things in English. You go onto the web. It's not a problem if you want to know what to do. You don't have to learn in order to know what to do. If you don't know what to do, you go onto the internet, and you ask Google a question, and Google will tell you what the halacha is, and that's the end of it. But the reason we learn Torah is to learn how to think, to learn how to reason, how to deduce, how to figure out what God wants from us in all the complex situations in which we find ourselves during any given time, at any given moment. And therefore, you'll see this here clearly in the Ramban. What other legal system would you say the purpose of the legal system, and think of any legal philosophy, if you would ask any legal philosopher, what's the purpose of a legal system? I would guarantee you there's nobody in the world who would say, so that you're not over le tachmet. That's the purpose of the legal system? Yes, in the Torah, that's the purpose of the legal system. And if we didn't have a legal system in the Torah, we would be expected to make our own legal system. This doesn't replace the legal system of the land. So the Sheva Mitzvah, one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Noach, is to make a legal system. So we expect non-Jews to make legal systems. It's not only for Jewish people, of course. Every society, every civilized society is meant to make a legal system. And we would make a legal system too. But our legal system, if we made a secular legal system, would have nothing to do with Lo Tachmad. And here the entire legal system is for one purpose only, to know how to be Mekayim, the mitzvah of Lo Tachmad. That's Bova Kama, Bova Metzia, Bova Basra, that's Choshen Mishpat, Tur, Shulchan Aruch, with Shachan Taz, and with all the Sforim that have been written on it, and all the millions of Shirim that are given around the world, all of that, that everybody's learning in Yeshiva. Your kids go to Yeshiva, most of the time they're learning the Zikin. All of that is what? So as to know how not to be over the mitzvah of Lo Tachmad. That's what it is. So we've got to understand a whole lot more about Lo Tachmad as we move through this. But in so doing, we also need to get a clearer picture of the relationship between Jewish law and spiritual practice. Because one of the interesting things that we see in the first Rashi in Mishpatim is the juxtaposition of Mishpatim with the previous passage. So Mishpatim, since we didn't have a shir on Yisrael, I'm using the opportunity to use this as a shir on both Yisrael and Mishpatim. And the interface between Yisrael and Mishpatim, what does Yisrael end with? The whole thing is with the laws of building a Mizbeach. You shall build me an altar, you shall build for me an altar of earth. This is how you do it. This is what you mustn't do it. So it's all about the foundation, the platform for korbanos. So there's nothing more ritualistic than korbanos. I'm using the word ritualistic for lack of a better word. So when we come to spiritual practice as opposed to laws of interaction between human beings, the real ben odom lamokums, the avodas beis hamikdash, the service of the temple, is the ultimate of ritual. So the Parshas Yisro ends with the platform for Avodas Beis HaMikdash, the platform for sacrifice, for Korbanos. The next thing opens up with Mishpatim, all the commercial and business law, and civil law, says Rashi. V'lama nismecho Parshas Dinim leParshas Mizbeach, the end of the first piece of Rashi. And why are the laws, all these commercial, business, civil laws, put right after Mizbeach? That already gives you a clue that this is nothing like any other legal system in the world. What legal system in the world will you see the introduction? If you look at the preface of a law book, you'll see a whole passage about building altars and sacrifices. It's not going to happen. But ours does. Says Rashi, that last piece of Yisro is the preface to Mishpatim. So our legal system, if you open our law book, our textbook on law, Mishpatim, the preface is about korbanos. What is that? Doesn't make sense. Lo malacho, to teach you, says Rashi, shetasim Sanhedrin etzel hamikdash, that the Sanhedrin, the court of law, the high court, the appeal court, the constitutional court, the supreme court, whatever each in each country, whatever it's called, the Sanhedrin is like the supreme court in the United States. More so, it has to sit at the Beis Hamikdash. That's where it sits. It doesn't sit outside the capital and near the White House. It sits by the Beis HaMikdash, because it's not a political instrument, it's an instrument of religious activity. It's an instrument of spirituality. That's what Jewish law is. Jewish law is not an instrument of civil obedience, and Jewish law is not an instrument of civil structure that we would have in any case. Again, there's no thought that if the Torah didn't give us laws, we wouldn't make our own laws. Of course we would. So these laws are not for that. The Torah doesn't have to tell us don't murder. We wouldn't murder even if the Torah didn't tell us that, for all sorts of reasons. We don't need the Torah for that. And so with all the laws of Mishpatim, the laws of Mishpatim are given to us as part of our temple service. This is part of spirituality. This is not something separate. And this becomes really important in understanding how to integrate the Torah so that we don't start splitting it up into silos. There are differences, and there's differences in methodology as to how you reason. You reason differently when you're learning Kochim from the way you reason when you're learning the Zikin. But at essence, at the Yesod, at the foundation, we've got to understand the integrity of the Torah and that the Torah is not siloed. And so that's what Rashi teaches us. Lo malachos shetasim sanhedrin leitzel amikdash. You should understand that the proper place for the Supreme Court is not next to any political or legal instrument, but next to the highest of spiritual instruments, next to the Beis Hamikdash. That's where the Sanhedrin has to sit, and they're not allowed to meet anywhere else other than next to the Beis Hamikdash. So again, we're seeing that Jewish law, Jewish civil and business law, is not a legal system in the secular sense of the word, but part of spiritual practice. It's linked to the temple, which is the ultimate of spiritual practice. And we have a various midrashim, but there's a specifically a Tanchuma that says at the beginning of this parasha, "May dichtiv v'oz melech mishpat oyhev." What does the verse mean when it says that the king of mishpat, the king of law, loves power, or the powerful king loves law? Omale Moshe Yisrael hare nosan lachem HaKadosh Baruch Hu Torosan. So Moshe teaches the Jewish people at the beginning of Mishpatim, God gave you the Torah. Im ein aten mekablim es hadinim, harehu noit lo michem. If you don't accept these laws, the financial laws, the business laws, if you don't accept that, the God will take the Torah away from you. He has no interest in frum people who don't keep business law. No interest in it. It's worthless. If you don't keep the laws of Chosh and Mishpat, then I don't need the laws of Arachayim and the laws of Yeridaya, and I don't need Kochim, and I don't need Taurus. The rest of the Torah will be taken away from you. We don't need it. This is the foundation. This has to be in place. If this isn't in place, nothing's in place. Lama sheloi noson lachem es haTorah, because he only gave you the Torah. Ela al menashe tasu es hadin. Incredible Tanchuma. He only gave you the Torah so that you'll keep commercial law. That's why he gave you the Torah. This is so important. This is so central. That's the reason for the whole Torah. Everything else is peripheral. And what does Hillel say when he's asked to teach the Torah to a potential convert in one sentence? What does he tell him? Don't do to others what you don't do unto yourself. Where does that come from? What parasha would that come from? Yes, I know that Vav Terecha Kamocha comes from Seder Kodshim, but all the laws relating to how not to treat others, where would that come from? Mishpatim. So what is Hillel saying? Hillel's quoting the Tanchuma. And he's saying, you want to know the whole Torah? Mishpatim is the whole Torah. Everything else is peripheral to Mishpatim. And it's so interesting because in a way, we have that tradition still today. As I said to you, if a boy goes to yeshiva, the chances are that what he'll start learning is Nezikin. Either Noshim, how to treat women, or Nezikin, how to treat people. That's what he'll learn. And his entire time in yeshiva, he'll be learning those two things. But somehow we missed it, so that becomes his kind of intellectual pursuit. But the real measure of progression becomes religiosity. And the Tanchum is making it very clear that just as you go to yeshiva to learn Nezikin, so you go to yeshiva to practice Nezikin. The rest comes as an outcome. Now, how does Shmir Shabbos come as an outcome? How does Kashrus come as an outcome? Well, if you learn and practice Nezikin as a spiritual practice, you will become a spiritual person. If you're becoming a spiritual person, you will have a need for Kashrus. You will have a need for Shabbos. You'll want to know these things. And the urge for religiosity will come from within. If you don't learn Nezikin, then the urge for religiosity will be imposed socially. You won't get a shidduch if you don't have a big hat, and you won't get a shidduch if you don't eat glatt kosher and keep Chol of Yisrael and all these things. So it becomes externally imposed instead of internally driven. Whereas if you would learn Nezikin, if you would learn the Mishpatim, the laws of how to interact with people as a spiritual practice, not as a legal exercise, not as an intellectual exercise, but you'll see that as part of Kol HaTorah Kula, you'll understand Hillel's principle, and you'll understand what the Tanchuma says, that this is the whole Torah, then believe me, as you learn that, as you struggle over a Ketzos HaChoshen to understand a difficult concept in some monetary legal issue, you will be moving from spiritual plane to spiritual plane to spiritual plane. And as you do so, you're going to want more spiritual satisfaction, you're going to want to know the mitzvahs, and And this was this. I'm not even telling you this in theory. This was the foundational principle of Kedeto, of the community I founded in Johannesburg, where the only thing I taught was Gemara and Ashkofa and so on, but not religiosity. That wasn't even a requirement. They didn't even have to be Shomer Shabbos. It wasn't an issue. But everybody became Shomer Shabbos. And everybody became Frum. People became great Yerushalmi. And people sent their children to yeshiva. Where did that come from? Where did that impetus come from? From learning Nezikin. From learning Mishpatim. From understanding the centrality of it. We know it works. So why aren't we doing it in an educational system? Who knows? But that's the way to make sure that our religious growth is balanced, is normal, is rounded. When we need our spirituality, because we're growing spiritually, and how do we grow spiritually? By learning and practicing the principles of Mishpatim. V'yimatem o'isim o'isom, says the Tanchuma further, and if you observe the laws of Mishpatim, harehu machazir batei dinim uvasei amikdash elohem, Hashem will return the batei din and the batei mikdash. Both. They go hand in hand. Beit din is a court of law. Beis hamikdash is a temple. They go hand in hand. You can't have one without the other. If you observe Mishpatim, you'll get the Sanhedrin back and you'll get the Beis HaMikdash back. They'll come together. Vashiva, as it says, Vashiva Shoftecha Kavarishoina. I'll return your judges as before. And then it says, Tziyun B'Mishpatifte. The Tziyun will be redeemed through Mishpat. That's what Torah is. So if we're interested in the security of the state of Israel and we want to see it moving towards Tziyun B'Mishpatifte, we've got to be makpid in Mishpatim, in Hilchos Chosh and Mishpat. That's what we've got to be very careful about. Nowadays, if something goes wrong, people will jump to a conclusion that the mezuzah must be checked, the tefillin must be checked. Well, nothing wrong with checking mezuzahs and tefillin. Sometimes there is something wrong because sometimes the checking does more damage than the not checking. But that's not what has to be checked. When things aren't going well, particularly nationally, Chosh and Mishpat has to be checked. How are we dealing with each other in business? How straight are we? And are we straight according to the laws of the Chosh and Mishpat, or do we have our own standards of straightness adopted from the civil legal systems of other nations? Are we really scholarly in Chosh and Mishpat? Are we teaching the world business law, or are we learning business law from the world? Are we going to Harvard Law School, or are Harvard professors coming to yeshiva? I've seen yeshiva bochrim at Harvard. I haven't seen Harvard Law School. One or two, maybe, professors going to yeshiva because they want to understand law. That's where we need to get. We need to get to that position where our Chosh and Mishpat and our Torah becomes the most advanced understanding, not just of a legal system, but most importantly of how a legal system links to a spiritual system. But they're not too, you don't go to India to learn spirituality and to Harvard to learn law. You go to Yerushalayim to learn the two as one. That's what Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad means, that it's all in one place. Dinim and Beis Hamikdash is in one place. Mizbeach and Mishpatim is in one place. That's what we have to be able to teach. That's the essence of Torah. And if we're not teaching that, then we're not teaching Torah. We're teaching some kind of version of it, but we're not teaching Torah. That's the real contribution of the Torah and of the Jewish people to the world if we do it properly. So let's go a little further to understand somewhat more of this interface between the legal system and the spiritual practice. Now the real integration, the point of integration, where do you think is the most stark metaphor we have for the integration of the legal system and the spiritual system of the Torah? Can you think about where that is?
You mean in the Torah?
Yes. The starkest metaphor for the integration of the legal system, of civil law with spirituality.
King carrying the Sefer Torah?
King carrying the Sefer Torah is a nice one. Where else?
Can I think of Yom HaDin?
Yom HaDin, also good. You'll kick yourselves if I tell you. That's why I asked you so that you'll have a chance not to kick yourselves. It's much. You're getting all very complicated. It's terribly simple. It's terribly simple.
Yom Kippur.
Well, how about Yom Kippur?
Yom Kippur, the scales of justice.
Okay. All these are very good, very advanced thinking, but until you get a bit closer. How about the luchos? One side is what? Spiritual practice, and one side is civil law. One set of luchos. There it is. That's how the Torah was given to us. And on that, the Ramban unusually quotes a piece from the Sefer HaYetzirah. The Sefer HaYetzirah is a work of under 2,000 words that has gone through a little bit of metamorphosis. Some people say that originally it was under 300 words. Rabbeinu Sadia Gaon says it was written by Avraham Avinu. And most people take that view that it was written by Avraham in its original form. It's kind of evolved a little bit, but it's still only about 2,000 words long. Written poetically, very difficult to understand, and the Ramban quotes a piece of it. So I'm going to learn the piece that the Ramban quotes, and then we'll understand aspects of it. It's not something that one can fully understand. So you know the idea today, everybody knows about the Esses Spheres. People sometimes don't know about Shabbos and Kashrus, but the Esses Spheres, they know. I don't know what they are. I don't understand them. I've tried to understand them all my life. Maybe one day I will. But there are Esses Spheres. There are 10 different forces in the world that come from God down to the world. There are 10 different channels through which these forces come, and they each have their own characteristics. Sefer Yetzirah, in the third paragraph of chapter 1, says, Esser Sfiris Belimo, the 10 Sfiris of Belimo means without anything. So the Sfiris, kind of the 10 Sfiris of nothing. Bemispar Esser at Etzbois are the same number as the 10 fingers. So that's quite an interesting image. So Esser Sfiris, 10 fingers. Chamesh Keneged Chamesh. Five next to the five. That's like the luchos. You're right. Five next to the five. Now, normally the Esses Spheres are not laid out that way. Normally the Esses Spheres are laid out in quite a sophisticated Kabbalistic form that keeps them in balance. These 10 spheres are in unbelievably powerful forces. So if you can imagine like a nuclear power station, a nuclear power station is like a child's toy compared to the Esses Spheres. The Esses Spheres... It was through the Esses Spheres that the world was created, that the world is sustained, and that the world could be destroyed. It's incredibly powerful. And normally they're represented and kept in a balance that they almost neutralize each other. So the force is not that big. But when you put them five against five, an enormous force is created by that polarity. And we're going to understand a little bit more about polarity. So Chamesh Etzbos Keneged Chamesh, five against five. And we'll explain it a little bit further. Uvris Yochid, and a covenant of oneness. Yochid, a covenant of oneness, a bris. Mechuvon Be'emtzo is down the middle. Now, what is a covenant? You make a covenant when two forces have the ability to destroy each other. And they need a covenant. If they don't have an ability to destroy each other, they don't need a covenant. You make a covenant between two nations that have the power to destroy each other, and the covenant holds them apart. Or you have two businesses, or you have two individuals that can destroy each other, and they make a deal, they make a covenant that holds their forces behind. So if you can imagine, there are these two sets of five with an enormous energy between them, governed by a covenant, a bris yochid, be'emtza. The bris are two, there are two dimensions to the bris. Bemilas haloshen, the verbal bris, because that we often talk about arel sfasayim and the idea of a circumcision of the mouth. But we'll understand that a little bit more. But that metaphor comes up over and over again in Tanakh. Uvemilas hamaor, and with the mila, with the regular mila, the physical mila. Those are the bris. Now, after this, it's just like way out. This doesn't seem to make any sense. You know, the 10 spheres, five against five, with a bris down the middle, the circumcision of the mouth, and the sexual circumcision. That's kind of, that's all it says. That's it. So let's try and understand it a little bit further than that. There are two organs of creation, of human creation. We can create with two organs. We don't have anything else. We can create with our mouths, and we can create with our sexuality. There's no other way we can create it. We use our hands, then we're forming, we're not creating. We're changing the form of something that already exists. But to create an idea that didn't exist before, we can do that intellectually by creating thought, and for that we need language. We wouldn't be able to, if we didn't have language, we couldn't conceptualize, and if we couldn't conceptualize, we couldn't create concepts. So the human creation is a function of our verbal ability, which includes all the intellect that goes with the verbal activity, and that's why we're told in Bereshis that when Hashem was Vayipach Be'ap of Nishmas Chaim, when Hashem breathed the divine breath into the human being, making the human being a creator like him, Unkelus says that's Ruach Mamalel, or the power of speech, because the power of speech gives us the ability to create. That's the one force of creation, and we can create life using our sexual capability. That's it, and life different to animals. Animals can create animal life, but they can't bring an ashoma into the world. They can't bring spirituality in the world. We can bring spirituality into the world with our mouths. What are examples of that?
Brachos.
We can be makdish something. We can create hekdish. We can sanctify. We can kiddushin. We can make a woman an aishes ish. Our mouths have enormous spiritual powers. We can create spiritual. Being spiritual concepts, spiritual objects with our mouths in ways that no other being can create, and we can bring spirituality and we can create a spiritual reality also through the sexual union. That's something that we're able to do. So these two forces become very important, and they are the bris. So the bris, now you've got an intellectual and verbal bris, and you've got a sexual bris, which keeps these two forces in balance. Now, when you put these 10 sephiros into these columns of 5 each to represent the two hands, it works out that the one column are all the spheres of chesed, and the other column are all the spheres of gevurah. So the 10 spheres are categorized into two groups. One is chesed, which is love and kindness, and one is gevurah, which is power and limit and limitation and so on. But chesed and gevurah have a slightly different angle to them as well. Chesed is potential. So when you talk about love is something that's in potential. Love and kindness is something that is in potential. Gevurah is when you actually express it. So gevurah is the expression, and chesed is in potential, which if we go one step further means, strangely, that the spheres of gevurah are the feminine spheres, and the spheres of chesed are the masculine spheres. So when you put them into these column of 10-10, you've actually got a column of masculine, a column of feminine, and you need a bris between them to manage that tension. Because what a bris is, a bris, and here I'm going to define bris in a different way from the normal, but that's what bris really means. A bris holds polarity in equilibrium, which results in the creation of a massive buildup of potential energy. So if you can think of two forces, it's like in electricity. You've only got potential energy if you've got two poles. You need a positive and a negative. You need a male and a female. So bris is when you've got two forces, and you can hold them in equilibrium, although they want to come together, and in coming together they would destroy each other and everything around them. You can hold them in equilibrium and manage the tension. That's what bris does. But in managing that tension, you're building up potential energy. So it's really interesting, and we see that in other areas of life. If you want to build up a reservoir of water, you've got to dam it up. As you dam it up, the tension against the dam wall becomes bigger and bigger. You've got to build a wall that can contain the tension of the buildup of the water in order to have the potential water. If you just want the water to flow, then you've got no potential. You've only got actual. There's as much water as there is in the river. The town can draw. The river dries up. There's nothing there. If you want a reservoir of water, you've got to dam it up. And damming up is the way, that's bris. Bris is to take a force or two forces and hold them back, contain them. And in that containment, their potential energy rises. It doesn't diminish. So that's what's important to understand. Containment decreases actual, increases potential. Are you with me? Do you understand what I'm saying? So if you take the containment away, there's more actual, less potential. You build containment, there's more potential, less actual. So you think of it financially. So you want to spend all the money that you've got all the time that you've got, so you've got more actual. You're spending money. You've got other people who are earning as much as you're earning, who are not living on the same level as you are, and you're feeling very good. But who's more financially strong? Who's got financial strength? The ones who've contained it, the ones who've dammed it up. They're building up potential. They're becoming powerful financially, whereas the person who's using it all up at the time isn't in any area of life. It works like that. If you've got a force, containing the force builds potential. Releasing the containment increases the actual but decreases the potential. Jews, a Jewish person, a spiritual person, always has to see that his potential is higher than his actual, because that's where the force is, that's where the energy is. If your potential is dissipated, you've got no force. There's nothing in you. You as a person, you as a gavra, are nothing. You've given it all out. You've given it all away. You've got to build up within you in order to have the power and the force to be able to use it. And then it's interesting, when you've got that force, it's not even the force of the actual. So take a city that has a dam, and that dam there's enough water in the dam for 10 years, even if there's no rain. And let's say there will always be rain. There's not even a sophic. We know that there'll always be. It will never have to draw on those 10 years of water. It will never have to draw on the dam. And you've got another city not far away that doesn't have a dam. Who's the strongest city commission? Who can call the shots? So the power that you have from accumulated potential is a spiritual power. It's not even a physical power. The power you've got from having a lot of money in the bank is a spiritual power. A person who's got a lot of money in the bank and in investments walks differently, he talks differently, he functions differently, he acts more securely. Where does that come from? It's translating the potential into a spiritual force. By spiritual, I'm saying intangible. That means the way you interact with people. It's social, it's spiritual, it's human, it's emotional, all of those things. I'm putting into the category of spiritual, meaning non-physical. The money in the bank is physical. The guy who has money in the bank acts with a spiritual force that the guy who doesn't have it can't. Now, you can have a person, for example, who has other stuff in the bank. So you can have a great Talmid Chacham. You can have a brilliant artist. You can have a great philosopher whose potential is in his brain power and in his knowledge and in his wisdom. And he's able to conduct himself with a certain confidence and with a certain spiritual power. I'm not suggesting that all the potential has to be tangible potential. All I'm saying is whatever your currency of power, you need more in your tank, you need more potential than action. Because it's the potential which gives you the spiritual power. It's not the actual which gives you the spiritual power. I'll come to questions in a moment. So if you look at bris, what bris is the power of containment that holds force in equilibrium, enabling potential to be built up. That's what bris is. So that's a bris between two people. That's a bris between two nations. And that's the idea of a bris that a boy has. The idea of the bris is also one of containment. And the idea of sexual containment, and that in that is not sexual weakness, in that is sexual power. The person who knows how to contain himself, particularly the man in this case, who knows how to contain himself and can contain himself, is the far more powerful sexual force than the one who's dissipated. There's no comparison. And that applies not only in terms of society as a whole, that a kind of person is able to channel his sexuality as opposed to a person who's all over the place and promiscuous, that for sure one can see the difference. And you can see it in people's faces. You can see it in their personalities. You can tell immediately whether they're sexually promiscuous or they're not. You can tell by their energy. But even within the marriage, even within their own intimate relationship, the individual who's able to channel and master and contain and use, builds up, is able to build up a potential energy that makes him far more masculine and potent than the individual who's kind of all over the place and undisciplined. So the force of that discipline in sexuality is a discipline like the damming of the wall that builds potential power. And exactly the same applies with the mouth. If every time you think something, it's out, whatever you think you say and it's out there and so on, that's fine. That's the person who's spending money all the time. And you might be popular socially because you're kind of the life of the party and you're always talking, but there's nothing left. There's nothing inside. There's nothing beneath the surface. You're not building up the potential from which you have your spiritual force. the spiritual force is to know I've got a whole lot of stuff you've never heard. That's power. If I'm sitting around at the table, or you're sitting around, not me particularly, any of us, if we're sitting around here, and I know that whatever I know, you've heard already, what kind of potential, what kind of power have I got? If I know, and you know, that whatever you've heard is a piece of it, but there's plenty more, then there's a tension. Then you want to come and learn. I want to learn from you. I want to hear. If I know that whatever you now have heard already, you're already saying the same stuff over and over again, telling the same stories, telling the same jokes over and over again, it becomes draining. You've lost your power. But if every time I speak to you, I realize, my goodness, I thought I knew this person. I thought I knew what they had to teach. A whole new insight, a new way of looking at the world. That's power. So power and force is in the containment of, just as the sexual energy, and with that comes all the energies that are related to that, not just the purely sexual, the whole social interaction and the way we deal with people. And the same applies in the intellectual area, respected, represented in containment of the mouth. So that's why these two britot are so very, 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 very important. So now the Ramban on this piece of Sefer HaYetzirah actually lists what are some of the polarities that this bris keeps balanced. So one, for example, he says, is Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebal Peh. That's masculine and feminine. That's potential and actual. Torah Shebichtav is all the potential. You look at the Torah Shebichtav and it's five little books. It's not a very big work. It's pretty small work. And then you look at the Shas, at 25 volumes or whatever it is of Shas, and you realize, oh my goodness, and that all comes from the Torah. And then you think, you know, you've gone through Shas, you've got it, and then you realize, what about the Rambam and Tzvi Shulchan Aruch and everything that goes around them? And then you kind of got that, and there's more and more and more and more. That's the potential of Torah Shebichtav. That what's written down is the damming up. And there's just more and more and more. That's the power. That's the bris between Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh. Written law and oral law. And then there's Shemayim and Eretz. There's heaven and earth. Heaven is all the potential. So whatever there is, whatever's going to happen in history has its source in heaven. It's there. And things we don't even know and we can't even imagine are there in potential already. Shemayim is all the potential. Eretz is where it actualizes. Eretz is where it actually happens. Chatan and Kala, says the Ramban. Sexuality. Two different poles. The five and the five. Olam Haba and Olam Hazeh. Olam Haba full of potential, Olam Hazeh full of actual, or possibly even the other way around. So the containment, the brit, the containment is what ensures that the potential is more than the actual. And if the potential is more than the actual, you've got a build-up of power, and that power is what enables you to be spiritually potent. What is it that we're containing? So here, I'm looking for a word. Let's start with an English word. What are we containing? Both think of words and think of the sexual force. What is the word you would use to describe what it is that you're containing? One word works in both, the sexual and the intellectual. Sorry? Patience? Close? Sorry? A creation. No.
Energy.
But what is almost the negative, because you're holding it back? Something you want and you're not doing?
Potential.
I like the word impulse. But your impulse is to do it. Now, I want to do it. I've got something I want to say. I've got something I want to tell it. I've got a story I want to share it. You know, feeling sexual urge, I want to express it. That's impulse. Containment is keep the impulse, not destroy it. This is not about destroying the impulse. This is about damming it up. This is about putting it in the reservoir. It's not about throwing your money away. It's about giving it to Martin Shanling and telling him to invest it for you. That's what it is. It's build it up. That's what you want to do. And what's the Hebrew word for impulse?
For what?
Impulse. I've given it away to you already. What's the Hebrew word in this context? We can use different words. You can use those words, but in the context of tonight's conversation, what should the Hebrew word be for impulse? Chemda. Chemda. That's what chemda is. Chemda is impulse. So what is loy tachmot? Don't follow your impulse. Don't act impulsive. Because you lose your force if you act impulsive. And we see that in the Ibn Ezra. So let's Let's have a look. Now you've got the Ibn Ezra in front of you. Let's read through. This is a very famous Ibn Ezra, and I want to actually read through it with you, learn it through it with you, so that you know it inside. The Ibn Ezra is troubled with the law of Lord Tahmud on the basis of how can God tell us in the Ten Commandments how we are to feel. Lord Tahmud, don't, because it's normally translated as don't covet, don't want something that isn't yours. How can you say don't want something? If, what happens if you do? Now you've transgressed one of the Ten Commandments. What, you know, you walk past a beautiful car and you think, ooh, wouldn't that be a nice thing to have? Now you know, but that's what you feel. So what are you supposed to do about it? Says the Ibn Ezra. Anashim rabim yismahu al zeis hamitzvah. Many people are amazed and query this mitzvah. Eich yiye odom shelo yachmei dover yofa b'livo. Where do you find a human being who doesn't want something attractive? Just in his heart, just sees it and thinks, wouldn't that be nice to have? Kol mashu nechmad lamarein, or whatever's nice. That's how the consumerist society works. You go into a store, you see something nice, you want to buy it. What would happen to our society if nobody had any chemda? Vato etem lechol mashal. And now I'll explain it to you. I'll use it with a metaphor. Da ki ish kafri sheyesh lo das nechena. A peasant, a poor peasant, who can think straight, v'hu ro' bas melech shehu yofa, and he sees a beautiful princess. So this, I remember the first time I taught this Ibn Ezra, Princess Di was at a height. So I imagine this, and I was in South Africa, and I explained what it was. They're like an African peasant. And those who are familiar with it will kind of understand the image of a, from Central Africa, the middle of Africa, a peasant who's never seen a motor car, who's never seen any, just real Central Africa. And he sees Princess Di. Da ki ish kafri sheyesh lo das nechena v'hu ro' es bas melech shehu yofa, lo yachmid oiso b'libo sheyishkavio. He's not going to have sexual fantasies about her and think, this is a woman I would like to marry. That's not how he thinks. Ki yoda ki ze lo yitachen, because he knows it's impossible. So when you know something is absolutely impossible, if you think it's vaguely possible, maybe, then chemda works. But if you know it's absolutely impossible, there's no chemda for it. V'al tachashuv ze'ar kafri shehu ke'echod min ha'meshugoyim. And don't think that he's like a meshugan, and she's savish yeloi k'nafayim le'ufka shemayim. He won't have a desire, he won't have an impulse to fly with wings. Not going to do that. A normal person doesn't say, I'll jump off a building because I want to fly. I have a taiva, I have a chemda to fly. I'm looking at these birds, I want to be like a bird. I want to fly. We don't do that because we know it's not possible. So we only have a chemda for those things that are in the realm of possibility. Just as a person has no desire to have sexual relations with his own mother, no matter how beautiful she is. Because he's schooled from infancy to know that's not permitted. It's just not possible. And so every intelligent person needs to know that a beautiful woman or man, people don't acquire it. Quite an interesting thing. It links to our shirim, to shirim ago. People don't get their wisdom and their knowledge. People don't get their beautiful women or money because of their wisdom and knowledge. Now that we see today very, very clearly, isn't mm-hmm. that so? To see the enormous wealth that people have been able to accumulate, not through any of the traditional methods or... Mm-hmm. When you say, where does it come from? It doesn't come from Chochmah and Das. Raka shecholok lo Hashem. Hashem decides who gets what. The Omar Kohelis ula Adam shelo Omar. Sometimes Hashem gives a chelek to somebody who never worked for it. And the Chazal say in Moed Koton, Bani Chayim Mezoine, children, success with children, life and money, love bischus Talia Milsa is not dependent on your own merits. Doesn't matter whether you're a tzaddik or not. Ela b'mazlo. It's mazel. It's mazel. Now, what mazel means, we could have a long conversation about. But is it completely random, or is it forces that were created through parents and grandparents and great-grandparents and all sorts of things that forces before? But one thing is for sure, it's not through your own efforts. That's not where you get it. You get the most wonderful people whose children are really awful, and you get some really bad people who have the most unbelievable children. You have tzaddikim who go into business and they fail, and you have rishoyim who go into business and they succeed. You have the other way around as well. There's just no correlation between who you are and how you do in these areas. And we need to understand there's no correlation. That we've got to do our best, we've got to try hard, we've got to work, we've got to be bright, we've got to do all the right things, but there's no guarantee that because we're doing all the right things, we're going to get the right outcome. There are other forces. Maslow, just translate at the moment, Maslow means there are other forces at play besides your own personal stature as a human being that determine the quality of your children, your wife, and your money. And therefore, hamaskil lo yitaveh v'lo yachmoed. That's why an intelligent person won't have impulsive desires for things that aren't his or hers. And if he knows that his friend's wife is osu, she is more elevated than the princess in the eyes of the peasant. Isn't that an interesting metaphor, what he says? Because, you know, he always says that people think that the idea of sexuality in Judaism, the woman is run down and all that. So she's more elevated. The fact that there are such barriers between a man and a married woman who's not married to him, so a woman who's married to somebody else, the reason that there are such barriers is to elevate her to the level where she's out of reach. That's what's important. She's elevated to the point of being out of reach so that chemda doesn't come into play. That's what we want. We don't want chemda. Alkein hu yismach b'chelkoi. So why is it about all this? This is the most important line in the Ibn Ezra, and it's the piece that's very seldom quoted. What's the reason for loy tachmoi? Why does God tell us loy tachmoi? Why doesn't God just tell us, don't steal, don't take something that isn't yours. If you do, I'll kill you. Like he tells us the Shabbos. Doesn't say don't want not to keep Shabbos. Want what you like, just keep it. He doesn't say you'll be in trouble if you want to break Shabbos. You'll be in trouble if you do break Shabbos. But when it comes to Chosh and Mishpat and Noshim and Azikin, when it comes to those two areas of relationships with women and relationships with money, God says don't even want it. That's the problem. In fact, the reason you can't have it is so that you won't want it. Do you see the reversal? It's not don't want it because you can't have it. It's exactly as we've been saying. So it links in so beautifully. It's the last two shiurim. It's the reverse. It's you can't have it so that you won't want it. Because wanting something that isn't yours is the problem. Why? Says the Ibn Ezra. Because if you want something that isn't yours, you won't have passion for what is yours.
Mm.
It's a dissipation of potential energy. And we want the energy to be built up. We want the tension to be built up. So that everything that your whole desire and your impulse is towards what is yours, not towards what isn't yours. So that you can enjoy what's yours, engage in what's yours, commit to what's yours, build what's yours, invest in what's yours. And if we allow chemda, you're not going to do that. So now let's go further. If we say the whole of Chosh and Mishpat is to keep the mitzvah of Lo Tachmod, and Lo Tachmod is what for what reason? So that you will be chomed what is yours. So the whole of Chosh and Mishpat now is to learn how to engage and invest in what belongs to you. That's the important part. Put all of your effort into what belongs to you, into your business, into your family, into your friends, into your community. Put everything into there. Don't be looking around at all the other attractive things because that dissipates the energy. And if your energy is dissipated, it's not damming up. If it's not damming up, you're not building potential. If there's no potential, there's no energy and there's no force. And don't apply your heart to want and crave and desire things which are not yours. You should know, God hasn't given it to you. He hasn't given it to you because you don't need it. And whatever reason is, for your spiritual growth, you don't need those things. Somebody else needs them. So get off it and focus on what God did give you, because what God did give you, you do need for your spiritual growth, and you need to invest in it. Lo yuchal lakachta b'koychu v'machshavo yisov v'tach b'lo yisov. You cannot take what isn't yours with power, with strength, with strategy, with thoughts. You're not going to get what isn't yours. Put your energy into what is yours. So now what becomes really important then is if we just think of the image and the metaphor. So now you think of this human being damming up his power, his force, his energy, both in the area of sexuality and and that includes the whole of social interaction and emotional life, and in the area of intellect and verbal interaction, those two areas building up potential energy by containment. The important piece now is the damn wall. What is the wall? And here we have an idea which we'll speak about, I think, a lot in the coming shiurim. It's an idea that comes from the laws of Shabbos. And it's an idea which is not very prevalent in the United States at the moment. So for Americans, it's often an alien idea. It's called Rishus HaYochid, private property. A place where you, which is yours, which is not public. The idea that the wall, the damn wall, is that which separates you from the rest of the world. That which separates your family from the rest of the world. That which separates your business from that of the rest of the world. Because that's what the Ibn Ezra is saying here, isn't it? He's saying, understand the boundaries. Because you need that boundary to focus on yourself. The boundary is to build your own Rishus HaYochid. And we've become so accustomed to being out there that we've lost that boundary. And the boundary is very obscure. Whatever we think is out there. Whatever we do is out there. Wherever we go is out there. Everything's out there, and out there is in here. And there's no difference between out and in. And we don't have the tension created by the existence of a Rishus HaYochid and a Rishus HaRabim. That dam with all that water behind the wall. And you look down and there's this ravine down at the bottom with a little stream down at the bottom. That tension between the potential energy of the dam and the actual flow at the bottom, that's the tension between the Rishus HaYochid, the water in the dam, and the water outside the dam. And the water outside the dam, when the water goes through the floodgates and it goes outside the dam, it's no longer potential. Now it's actual. And it diminishes the potential. As the potential becomes actual, the potential is diminished unless it's replenished. And the only way it can be replenished is by preserving the wall, by preserving that damn wall and making sure that we build a Rishus HaYochid, that in our homes we build a Rishus HaYochid, that in our emotions we build a Rishus HaYochid. Not everything we feel do we have to say, do we have to share. Not everything we think do we have to say or write. That's the building of the power. And where do we have the determination? Where do we learn the structures of these rishuyos? That's in Mishpatim. That's what Mishpatim is. These are the boundaries. This is what is yours. This is what is not yours. This is what you can get. This is what you cannot get. This is what you're entitled to. This is what you're not entitled to. If you've damaged somebody and you've caused him $100 of damage, then that person has a right to $100 of yours. That $100 no longer belongs to you. It's not in your rishus hayochid. It belongs to him, so give it to him. Put it where it belongs. Don't hold on to it. Don't hold on to what isn't yours. And don't become attached to what isn't yours. And don't become attached to what isn't yours. So that's what the Ramban means. When the Ramban says that the whole of Mishpatim is designed to give us the principles of Eliyah Mishpatim keneged loitachmed. Kim lo yeda ha'odom mishpat habayis o hasodeh. Because if a person doesn't know the boundaries, the laws of his home, his business, his field, and other monetary matters, he starts thinking that things are potentially his, or actually his, and he will desire them, and possibly take them, and we destroy the whole idea of leitachmid. And that's why the linkage now between the legal system and spirituality, because we build our spiritual force through containment. Containment in the two areas, Noshim and Nezikim, are the two areas where we build our containment, the two brises, the two that the Sefer HaYetzirah talks about, the bris, the verbal and intellectual bris and the sexual bris, are the two brises that we talk about. We contain, we have to have a legal system in order to contain ourselves. Containment builds spiritual force and spiritual power, That's the spirituality, and that's why Sanhedrin sits in the Beis Hamikdash. That's why you need a mizbeach if you're going to have. What is a mizbeach? Mizbeach is sacrifice. Sacrifice is containment. You need the powers of containment if you're going to have spirituality. And mishpotim and kochim come together. The laws of the temple, the ritualistic laws of the temple and of sacrifice, and the commercial and the business laws and the civil laws of Chesh and Mishpat become together as one Torah, and are represented by the two luchos, Bein Adam L'Makom on the 1-5, the potential, the masculine potential, and the feminine actual on the other, creating the tension of the bris, which is the equilibrium. So that's where we'll.